1998 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents session 241, Lampooning the Latter Days, with Robert Kirby and Pat Bagley.
Okay, we're ready to start. Chew with your mouth closed, please. Keep the noise down. You got everything? Here, this is yours too. There's nobody here to introduce us, so we'll introduce ourselves. I'm Robert Kirby from the Salt Lake Tribune.
We need no introduction.
Yes, we do. There are some refined people here. And this is Pat Bagley, who's the editorial cartoonist for the Tribune. We're here today to talk about Lampooning the Saints. How do you know, how far is too far, I guess, is the subject of the comments that I want to make. A couple of weeks ago, I got a letter from a woman who asked me if I felt good about making money by making fun of Mormons. Which I thought was a really stupid question. Or at least one that didn't really, it must have been rhetorical at best. But we got into a bit of a dialogue on the internet about this question. And I soon explained to her that, look, there's not a lot of money writing this kind of stuff for Mormons, frankly, because there's a limited number of Mormons and only a limited number of those Mormons actually read. And so you're narrowing your market down by sticking to doing to writing stuff for Mormons, but that there was another motive for it, in that I was interested in, it was kind of a sociological experiment for me writing Mormon humor, that I was actually kind of on an idiot safari where I used humor as the bait. You go out into the woods and you say something and the idiots will pop up, depending on their reaction to it. I work in the Family History Center down in Springville, and I've been conducting this about humor. You can say just about anything, and people will believe you. For example, people would come into the Family History Center, and we'd talk about how they'd submit the names of their ancestors for the temple work to be done, and we had to make sure that they are, in fact, deceased, because you don't submit the names of live people to them, to the temple. And I would, just in the process of discussing this, I would tell them they have to be dead, because if we have to kill them, it costs extra. And they'll nod their heads and go along with that. So, about a third of them will. Anyway, the other two-thirds, you can't hear over there? Okay. The other two-thirds will laugh right out loud. So the people are actually wired to receive humor. Every one of us has parameters in which we feel that it's safe to laugh. And outside those parameters, we take offense. So in determining how far is too far is kind of a day-to-day operation when you do religious humor. There's no guarantee that people are going to find what you do funny. And so you end up relying a great deal on feedback, on what people say, or their response to the things that you write about. Do you know what you're going to do? Okay. And the feedback constitutes a really interesting part of what I do for me, because I tend to sort it out. And I categorize it, and I keep track of the amount of response that I get in terms of the quality, but also the type. I break it down into positive feedback from Mormons, active Mormons, if I can determine that, rather nasty feedback from Mormons, positive feedback from non-Mormons, nasty feedback from non-Mormons, and then official church correspondence. Which is really in a category all its own. We're going to, Pat and I are going to pass this back and forth as we go along here. So he's going to show you some cartoons, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the feedback. Do you want to go ahead with that?
Yeah.
Yes. Do you want to unwind it from here? Doesn't it take a deacon to do this? You got it? Okay, does it work? No? Is it turned on?
Hello?
All right. All right, quit it. You're confusing him now.
Easy to do.
So we can see these better. Can somebody turn off the light? Oh, good. Simple. I'm going to start out with a few cartoons that I didn't do that really have nothing to do with Mormons, but they're either have to do with cartoons, cartooning, cartoonists, or religion. See, this is a problem that cartoonists have often had. Can you see that? The reporter is saying, if anyone asks, you hit him in the forehead. So I'm limited by what the reporters come up with, by what kind of news comes out of the church. It's got to have some kind of frame of reference. This is how some people think cartoonists view themselves. You see, out of the way, you swine, a cartoonist is coming. It's just like that. Robert Kirby and I are kind of like a two-headed troll. I mean, every time we get asked to speak, it's usually the both of us. And so they say Pat and Kirby as if we're a single person. But I want you to know that there's a difference between a columnist and a cartoonist. And I did this to kind of illustrate the difference. You see that? He used to think that was funny. In the books that Robert Kirby and I have done, we've done three books together, a collection of his columns with illustrations that I've contributed to the book. This is my six-year-old at the time speaking to Robert Kirby, kind of like engaging the elders at the temple. The theological ramifications of killing me before I reach the age of accountability are obvious. I get to spit on you from the celestial kingdom. Can everyone hear? All right. I went to speak to the Miller Eccles group in California last year, and I did this to illustrate the difference between California Mormons and Utah Mormons. One of the constants that come up in Mormon cartooning are big families. And I dug this out from quite a few years ago. I think it was, let's see if you can see it here. It was early 80s that I did this one. In fact, very early 80s, like maybe 1980. Okay, from quite a while back when I first started at the Tribune, I was reading a newspaper. It says Utah population booms in the 70s. He says, honey, it's hard to imagine that kind of growth in just 10 years. She's holding a baby. She's pregnant. She's got all these kids running around. I got a lot of response to this cartoon from people who didn't appreciate my sense of humor. And it wasn't that I showed the woman barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. It wasn't that I showed a lot of kids. The thing they got upset about was that the picture of the temple was askew. That would never happen. You know, just to show you that things never change, I did this, forgetting completely that I'd done that other cartoon, I did this within the past 2-3 years. But, you know, same theme. Okay, Utah growing, don't Californicate Utah, just say no to light rail, all these kids. I've gotten better at doing bigger families. As I've gotten better, I can draw more kids. Anything we're anti-growth. Here's one from Kirby and my book. Families are forever. I remember as a missionary thinking, why is that a selling point? Oh, this is a fairly recent. It's like do you know what you call a van with 7 kids in Utah County? It's a sure sign of impotence. This is kind of like Coles to Newcastle. I mean, Utah got its 2 millionth resident. Oh, just a few years ago, 2 years ago. The Birds, Utah remake of Hitchcock's classic. Frightening stuff. You know, actually being a Mormon and doing Mormon cartoons, I can get away with it because I'm kind of inside the family. And when you're in the family, you can tell jokes and stories about, you know, the brothers, the sisters, the aunts and uncles. If you're outside the family and you criticize one of them, then they circle the wagons and they feel they get very defensive. Mormons are very touchy about criticism coming from outside. You know, and a lot of it is justified. We're typified as being kind of weird in the outside world. You know, I grew up in California, and California is pretty unusual itself. Oh, this is another one from one of our books. You know, again, the wise 5-year-old. Amen. The views expressed here were those of Sister Finkel and do not necessarily reflect those of the management or this 5-year-old. You know, it's sometimes hard to separate the Utah cartoons from the Mormon cartoons. Utah to grow, will be wedged in here like sardines, he's saying. The other side of the paper says diet pills pulled, you know, the fen-fen craze. And, well, it's going to be it's going to be packed sooner than you think. Oh, it was from a couple of years ago when Men in Black was released, and also the church was on Time magazine, and the church is somehow, for some reason, in the news a lot. These tourists are saying Men in Black is this summer's hottest movie. It's also this summer's hottest church. Here we go. You know, the difference between the Gentiles and those who go to church in Utah. And I'm sure that down deep, they'd rather be playing charades with us at the Ward Seminary party. A couple years ago, one of the politicians in Russia, a high-ranking politician, wanted to throw all the churches that were not Russian-based out of the country. And he specifically mentioned the Mormons and said that we were pond scum or something like that. And, well, this is kind of my take on it. News item, Russian nationalists want to kick out Mormon church. The two missionaries were saying, "Flip, Elder, it's not like we're planning anything bad." And here they are in Red Square. It's now Red Temple Square. On top of St. Basil's, they got an Angel Moroni. And Lenin's tomb is now the LDS Visitor Center. Oh, one more from our book. Temple guides at Temple Square. They're saying, "Why, yes, Mormons used to practice polygamy. Proof of its divine origin is that we didn't enjoy it for a single second." Polygamy has been in the news lately. I guess that Governor Leavitt made some comment about religious liberties and things like that. At the very end of this presentation, I'll show you the cartoon for Sunday's paper, and it's going to be dealing with that. That was from a book I did a long time ago. Pull up, Zork. It's not the Imperial Mothership. Being a cartoonist in Utah has got to be the easiest job in the world. But the hard thing is trying to keep ahead of the curve, because reality sometimes is weirder than anything that I can imagine. Not long after they built the Provo Temple, there's a water tank that sits down from the Provo Temple. If you've been to Provo, maybe you've seen it. But this is actually true. It actually happened. After they built the Provo Temple, one of the city councilmen suggested in Provo that they design this water tank to look like the Provo Temple that was across the street. You know, occasionally I do cartoons that you know, they're not funny, they're not lighthearted, but they have a point to them. Okay, here is Utah family, happy, happy, happy. But it's casting the shadow of domestic abuse. You know, even though we have a reputation of being the family capital of the world, there's also this darker side. We're all human. I mean, just because we're Mormons doesn't mean that we are immune to problems. Okay, the church and politics is always a lot of fun here. Some guy from the church office building, "Sister Finchley, I'm tired of these newspaper articles accusing the church of calling all the shots in Utah. Have the state legislature pass a resolution denying it." This is another true story. There was some committee put together that was supposed to look at the liquor laws in the state and come up with recommendations for new laws. And they did their job, and they came up with recommendations. But the problem was they couldn't get a state senator to sponsor the bill. And you need a representative to sponsor the bill. So they went down to the church office building, and they laid it out to somebody down there, and they said, "Look, this is all they're proposing, this is all that it means." And whoever they talked to said, "Oh, that's fine, I've got no problem with that." Well, before they were able to get back to the Capitol building, word had spread up to the Capitol that it was okay with the church, and every single senator sponsored the bill. It's absolutely true. Yep. Oh, we have an image problem here in the state. Tourist information, they've got posters up that say Utah fundamentally different. See Geneva just like the one in Europe. tour of the Osmond family compound. Welcome to Utah. No swearing, spitting, drinking, gambling, or partying. Image problem, what problem? Kirby and I, not too long ago, spoke to the Travel Council. We went out to Vernal and spoke to the Travel Council. And I did a few cartoons for them to, kind of highlight the image problem. This is the image that some people have of Utah when they come from outside the state. Image problem number one, a little too much inbreeding. Image problem number two, thou of a surety hast lips like unto a rose hind. I mean, you know, this polygamy thing again. Okay, but Mormons aren't the only ones that are kind of quirky about certain subjects. I don't know if you can see this very well. There's a sign pointing to the right that says Orthodoxy. The Pope is tapping on his glass, wanting American Catholics to head back towards Orthodoxy. And they're saying, do you hear something? It sounds like it's coming from the back. And they're going to Disneyland. And actually, the guy who's driving the car is the managing editor at the Tribune. But the fallout of this is I did this cartoon, and you know, doing a caricature of the Pope seems to me to be no big deal. But the publisher of the Tribune is a very devout Catholic. And after this came out, I received word through the grapevine that there were to be no more caricatures of the Pope in the newspaper while he was publisher. Because to him, that's a very sensitive issue. He has since retired, and I'm looking for the next opportunity to do a picture of the Pope. The Baptists, they've also got their things, too. They were going to boycott Disney because of their stand on gay employees. Okay, getting back to Utah's image. The Travel Council. We send out pairs of clean-cut young men and women into the world to go door-to-door, bearing witness to the to the vacation potential of our state. What a novel idea. You know, things get a little slow. I can always count on the state legislature or BYU to do something really dumb to give me some material. You know, you may have seen this in Sunstone. Okay, I knew this was going to happen, and, you know, just all kinds of tawdry stuff. Good thing they didn't show it, huh? Oh, the same issue. This appeared in the Salt Lake Tribune. Okay, this one can stay, but I want the offending portion covered. I mentioned the state legislature. Okay, remember when the word gay meant happy, fun, loving, lighthearted? I hated it back then, too. Oh, what I was saying about image problem, what they think they'll see and what they actually see. Tourists coming to the state. Kirby and I are working on a book that's about Mormons, and it's designed as kind of a primer for people coming into the state for the first time, you know, a quick introduction to the LDS Church. And that should be, they're saying, oh no, it should be out sometime in the spring. You know, one thing the reason we're doing it is if you want to find out about the Mormon Church, you can get it from one of two sources. One is from the Mormon Church itself, and the other one is from the anti-Mormons. And there's nothing that is non-threatening to people out there. You know, they all have their agendas. The only agenda that Kirby and I have is to make money. So, you know, not necessarily Mormon humor, but Utah humor again. This is way back when the Olympic Site Committee came out years ago. And they're saying, give them a 10 on the groveling portion of the selection process. We groveled better than anybody. The question comes up, is the church in favor of the Olympics? Do they have a stand? I think so. you know, again, not a Mormon cartoon, but okay, the health insurance plan most preferred by Utah's working poor. Please, God, don't let anything bad happen. I brought, oh, kind of a couple national cartoons, semi-national cartoons, just to show you that I can do that. I mean, it's not just Mormon stuff that I do. There. There was the issue about sexual harassment in the military some years ago. You know, this Monica Lewinsky thing just refuses to die. When it first came up, and, you know, you heard the allegations and you heard Clinton's denials, and you also heard that the reason that Clinton was able to deny it is because he only thinks that we're all adults here, right? He only thinks that penetration is sex. So that's the allegation. And that reminded me of something that I had heard at BYU. Stay moral, go oral. Okay, you can tell. You can tell. This wasn't published. I do a lot of cartoons. You know, even I know this is in bad taste. I do a lot of cartoons that are just kind of for local consumption for the newsroom, and I throw them in my files later on. I will be coming out with a book for Christmas. It's going to be a compilation of some of the best cartoons I did over the past 20 years. And I'm going to also include, oh, a dozen or two of the cartoons that never made print that you know, for obvious reasons. This may be one of them. Oh, yes. There's going to be a sealed portion to that book. Okay, like I said about BYU, you can always count on them to come up with something. This is when Coach Roger Reed was, well, when he quit. We are saddened by the sudden voluntary departure of Coach Reed. You know, in Utah County, there's just something in the water down there, I guess. Just over the past year, there's been the issue of the Rodin exhibit. There was more recently the issue of nude models, nude modeling that in Springville. Some art class had nude models. Some parents found out about it and went ballistic. Imagine people being naked behind closed doors. And then the most recent thing was editing the Titanic in one of the theaters down there. They cut out the modeling scene, believe it or not, the nude scene. Have I got that right? Yeah. Okay, life lessons learned in Utah County. See? Okay, to end up my portion, I'm going to, as promised, show you Sunday's cartoon. And to give you a little background, Jan Graham and Governor Mike Leavitt have been at odds over polygamy and, well, various issues, not just polygamy, but most recently this issue of polygamy has come up. Governor Leavitt made a plea for religious tolerance, I guess. But there's also issues of domestic abuse, incest, all kinds of stuff that kind of muddy the waters. And Jan Graham just kind of gave him the raspberry when it came to this particular issue. So this will be in Sunday's paper. There's Governor Leavitt. Sister wife Jan is doing that disrespectful thing again. Anyway, you've been a great audience. Thank you very much. Could we have the lights back on?
You people are so easy. I had to go speak in Jackpot, Nevada a couple of months ago. The Western Stockman Dealers Association called me up and said that they wanted me to come out and talk to them. And I was really nervous about it because I don't speak to many patently non-LDS audiences. And I didn't know what I would talk about. And I turned around in my head, what am I going to go speak to these people about? And the word I focused on most was this Stockman thing. And so I went out there. I drove all the way out to Jackpot, Nevada, thinking Ben Cartwright. And I got there, and room filled up like this, and I knew I was talking to people in the beef industry, and I thought, so I'll just make a few jokes about animals, and I'll be okay with that. And so I introduced myself. My name is Robert Kirby. I'm an omnivore. And I said, I figure that if God didn't want us to eat animals, he wouldn't have made them out of meat. And I thought, and they laughed kind of like this. And I thought, okay, that's pretty good. It's not Ben Cartwright. It's actually Hoss Cartwright. And they were a pretty good crowd after that. But there was a person in there that didn't like it. I mean, you're dealing with Stockman, and there was actually a couple of vegetarians. Didn't think that joke about meat was very good. Some jokes aren't very good. The problem is that humorists, whether you're a cartoonist or a writer, don't always know what it is. Pat and I were out in Los Angeles speaking to Sunstone West. Was it this year? Yeah, it was in March. We're standing there in the lobby of the airport, Hilton, and who should walk by but O.J. Simpson. And the things that most people just turn around and look and goes, oh my gosh, there's O.J. But Pat and I immediately start going with the jokes. The O.J. jokes, you know, and I run up and say, O.J., is this a good knife? And it went on and on like that, and people around us are really, you know, somewhat appalled by that, including people, you know, that are like our family. And so sometimes we get this feedback about humor rather late in the game, and we have to use it as a learning experience. In addition to the Mormon humor, I do a lot of just general humor. Tuesdays and Thursday column that I write in the paper is basically life humor, and no matter how innocuous you keep it, you're always going to get feedback from people who are upset about it, because you can never hit the mark for everyone. I wrote a column not too long ago about this new pop-up tent trailer that my family bought. We took it down to Grand Canyon Park and used it, and I wrote in there that I didn't particularly like using it, and I listed all the reasons why. One of the reasons was being that probably the reason they call it a pop-up trailer is because there's a propane stove inside. If you use it wrong, you can turn your tent into this inflated Jiffy Pop thing. I got a letter from a manufacturer of pop-up tent trailers who's really upset about that. And then I write about how I finally became an official resident of Utah because I bought a pickup truck. I mentioned in there that my dog didn't like the idea because I put her in the back and she jumped out about 40 miles an hour. So I get a wave of letters from people who are very concerned about my dog. People send me get well cards for my dog with flowers on them. And then there was the issue about loud kids. In Utah, you go to places, there are always loud kids there. And I said, most places you go where children are present, it sounds like you're bullwhipping a garage full of monkeys. I got, no kidding, a 2-inch thick package of psychological information about how to raise well-behaved children from this professor at a university back east. Some people, it just goes right on by them. You know, the arm's down, the lights are flashing, but no train is coming. They just don't get it. And usually when you do this in live and you do it in front of audiences, it's really easy to tell. I got my first actual my own stake related invitation to speak at an LDS ward a couple of weeks ago. I'd never done this before. Every time people would call and say, will you come and speak to a fireside or will you speak to our LDS ward, I always say, you need to talk to your stake president. You go to him and you ask him to call the strengthening the members committee. And if they say it's okay, I'll do it. They never call back. This time they did. And so I was kind of roped into it. I go out and speak to this warden, Granger. And I get up in front of the ward there, and I'm getting ready to go into my speak. And I can look down in the audience, and I see people who are just kind of waiting to see what I'm going to say because they know about the column in the Tribune. And I try to keep it, you know, reverent, but a little, but at least a little bit funny. So I told them I could beat up President Hinckley. It was based on a column that I wrote about people asking me if I'm afraid of church leaders. Said no, because I got beat them up. They're old. I said I could beat up the Pope and Mother Teresa and people like that too, because they're all old. Why would you be afraid of church leaders? And I remember sitting right down on the front row was this older woman, her grandchildren, and her daughter, her grown daughter. And the grandmother was just appalled. I mean, I could see her going white. Because I said, and here I am in a sacrament meeting, and say, yeah, I could beat up the prophet. And that's, I don't necessarily want to, but I could. And she was mortified. It was like Satan had popped up in church. And after a few minutes of listening to this, she turned with this incredulous look, shock and outrage, to look down, and she sees the rest of her family laughing. And that horrified her even worse. And I watched her the rest of the time I spoke. You know, she's just going through these. She's having a real hard time grabbing onto this, that people can say these sorts of things and still be in church. And it's made it, feedback has been the best ride for me out of all of this. I mean, it's fun to write stuff that people find is humorous, and it actually makes for a better experience for them within the LDS context, but the feedback is, I guess I'm still that little kid who teases dogs through the fence with a stick. There's still a part of that out there. Other churches, for some reason, don't seem to labor under this problem. My wife stopped going to the LDS church a couple years ago. She attends an evangelical free church over in Orem. And I went to one of their picnics last week on a Sunday. And having a really good time on a Sunday, having a picnic, and they brought along this big dunk tank. And the pastor of the church, Scott McKinney, talked me into being the Tribune's official representative in the dunk tank. So I get up there on this seat, and I'm sitting there over this cold water, and my daughter's throwing balls at the target, trying to drop me into the water. And just before she hits it, Scott runs over, slaps his hands on the dunk tank, and says their baptismal prayer. And it is funny, but there's an interesting concept. There's a degree of sadness in there because we're looking to bag people off of other groups. And it's a real traumatic situation for a lot of people. I have a friend who's on his way out of the LDS church, and his family has just gone ballistic over this. They can't handle it. And rather than being happy or using the degree of love or even humor about the situation, they focus in on with all the anger and the recriminations and the guilt. And what you've got then is people who are willing to tear families and friendships apart over church. Stuff like that. And it really is really interesting to see that going to the EVC and experiencing their general sense of humor and camaraderie over our religious differences. They talked me into doing that just so they could try to baptize me. And Scott will never let me live it down. You're an evangelical person now. You're not a Mormon anymore. So that's what I wrote the column about for on Saturday. It's okay to be funny, but you really should be saying something at the same time you're doing it. And that's why feedback is so important, is you really want to know if you're hitting your mark. You want to know if you're upsetting the idiots out there, but you also want to hear from people who are saying, yeah, this helps. This makes a difference. So, in that respect, you have any questions about humor? I've got some for you, but I'd like to hear. There's not a piranha in the dunk tank. I wrote a column once when we found a piranha, actually, in Utah Lake, a live piranha, not too long ago. And I got a letter from some of the people in the county offices down there saying that I was whipping the public up into hysteria. But they actually did. They found a piranha in the lake. But there's no piranhas in the dunk tank. Questions about writing humor? Yes. Do I use the context or the concept of absurdity for the basis of humor? Never. Only just about all the time. That's the beauty. And Pat told you about how you never run out of ideas when you're dealing in an area with BYU and the state legislature. It's true of Mormons. Just when I think I've said it all, I'll be sitting in sacrament meeting and something will go ding. That's got to be it. Anything else? Okay. How far is too far when you're talking about religion? I mean, should you stop at the risk of hurting somebody's feelings? Because you're always going to hurt somebody's feelings. So how far is too far? I watched Private Parts last night with Pat. We were kind of interested in how Howard Stern develops an audience. And it's obvious that he goes too far for a lot of people, but he's still really popular. So what constitutes too far with religion? For this audience, probably not much.
When you become serious.
When you become serious. So I guess as long as you're laughing, you can say just about anything you want. Yes? Yes.
Their initial thing when we stand you up, when the shock that brings on the humor, when that shock goes into revulsion, the humor stops, and the absurdity of the seriousness of it doesn't hit home to give them more humor.
So when the surprise gives way to revulsion, that's when you've gone too far. That's still a risky business. And yes.
I don't think you ever go too far. Every column I have read has been a source of laughter, but she's also been pointing out something that needs to be said.
She says she doesn't think that I ever go too far, that I always point out something that needs to be said. For that, Irene, you get a dollar.
Somebody pointed out, you know, you do a cartoon or a humor column, a joke, and the first reaction is, you know, they laugh. And I had a neighbor that I would do these cartoons, and I kind of run the cartoons past him because he was a good LDS. And I'd show the cartoons to him, and he'd laugh, and then he'd kind of shake himself like, I should not be laughing at this. This is wrong. He was a litmus test.
There are particular types of people that you don't trust their reaction. Anybody above an elder's quorum president, for example, you don't trust their reaction. Anybody who has some kind of official connection with BYU, even if it's just a student, you don't trust their reaction. Your mom, you don't trust your mom's reaction. Yes. Yeah, he was doing it as a joke. Everybody thought that was pretty hysterical. No, he's not.
I feel really reassured when people in high positions in any church have a sense of humor about ourselves.
Oh, sure, you bet.
And so I was a little worried because I have known people who would have done that seriously.
Yes. I had missionary companions that would do stuff like that. Seriously. You bet. Yes?
Many people in the Jewish community will laugh at Jewish humor.
Jewish humor, yeah. Many people in the Jewish community.
Many people in the Mormon community won't. What's the difference?
A lot of it is that we still... we still live with a Nauvoo syndrome. Even though we're not a persecuted faith anymore, we are the product of a religion that has been fear-based for a long time. The world is against us. We've gotten to the point where we're Mormons first and human beings second. And we cut ourselves off from the rest of the world that way. Yes.
I was wondering if your cat experience was sort of in a dark garage late at night that a church authority or someone has told you that they really thought it was funny, but they couldn't say that officially.
Oh, I drag church leaders into this. The question is if anybody, a church leader, ever non-officially told us that they thought we were funny. The closest I've ever come to that was I went to the a dinner with the National Coalition of Christian Jews, and the room was filling up with people a lot like this, and I'm standing there with my wife trying to be as anonymous as I can, and I see James Faust come in, President Faust, and they're coming up the way so that I know that our paths are going to intersect. And so I'm trying to make myself sort of small behind my wife, knowing that pretty soon we're going to come into contact. And I figure maybe what will happen is I'll just be able to shake his hand and then get away. But about from here to that door, he sees me and we make eye contact. I've never met him before in my life. And he goes like this. He goes. oh, no, this is going to be really bad. I mean, really bad. Because he doesn't smile or anything. He just sort of like, you wait right there. And he gets up to me, and it was great. He says, yeah, we had a really nice conversation. Yeah, there are books that you can do. If you want to be released, you could bring one of our books in there. To get back to your question about that, when I wrote in the column years ago where I said I could beat up President Hinckley, some of you have already heard this before. I'll repeat it for those of you who haven't. I thought I'd really get into a lot of trouble from that. I get a lot of negative mail from Mormons who said, oh, he said he could beat up the prophet. What are we going to do? Nothing happened for several months, and then finally the stake president called me and said, Robert, you said you could beat up the prophet. I said, yeah, I know, I can. Church is true, so is that. And he says, you can't do that. I says, well, yeah, I can. First Amendment. And he said, well, it's you've upset some of the brethren. They're a little concerned about this. Ended up having a conversation with the brethren, some of them. One in particular, and I'm not going to tell you who it is, so don't ask me later. But I drove home from that thinking, well, maybe I did offend President Hinckley. I mean, he is the prophet after all. So I went home and I wrote him a letter, and I said, Dear President Hinckley, I'm sorry I said I could beat you up. I didn't mean it seriously. I was just kidding around. You know, I'm sorry I was so irreverent. Hope you weren't offended. I won't do it anymore. P.S. I think I could still beat up the Pope. And I thought that would be the end of it. I'm being completely serious here, too. About 2 weeks later, I get this letter in my box from the church office building, Office of the President. And I'm standing there looking at this letter and thinking, Uganda. I'm going to Uganda. That's what this is. Tierra del Fuego, the Antarctic, someplace like that. They got a mission. Open it up. Three lines. Not offended. Don't worry. Have fun. So, yes, some of them, I mean, humor is an individual thing. And you're going to get church leaders, some church leaders that have a better sense of humor than others. Some that are very secure in themselves, and they're okay with that. Do I draw a line for myself as to what's taboo? Well, it depends on whether or not I want to be released from whatever I'm doing. But yes, I do. There are things that I won't write about. Religious ordinances for any religion I don't write about. I don't make fun of Catholic Mass any more than I make fun of The LDS sacrament or temple ordinances. I got about a billion garment jokes, but I'm never going to put them in print. They're funny to me, but I recognize that certain things just should remain untouchable, just because it makes better sense to do that. And what's personally funny for me and what I use to get me through, you know, say another temple session or whatever, I know isn't going to work for a lot of other people. Yes. Did I run my wife out of the church? Is that what you're asking? Humor is a coping mechanism. I think that's what you may be driving at, that sometimes when painful things happen or you get angry, it's a whole lot easier to laugh about it than to scream and yell. So there is some correlation. Humor for me is a way of trying to cope with the brand of Mormonism that the group requires. And, it's either this or I get up on top of the chapel with a rifle. For me. Yeah, so I write. I mean, it's sort of therapy. And a lot of people will tell you that it isn't working as well as it might. You don't want the alternative. Have I read the book, The Humor of Jesus? No, I haven't. Uh-huh. Yeah, I would. I would be very interested in that. Here I thought it was that it came to pass that Nephi died. We're about ready to wrap up here, unless you have some other comments. Yes. Let's see, what was that about? Was that about the nude models in Springville? Oh, I didn't get any feedback at all, especially not from people in Springville. In Springville, I'm kind of, they see me come and everybody kind of goes other places. Nobody wants to be famous anymore. Oh, a bunch of cowards. This works for me. I hope that it works to some degree or another for you. There are a lot of questions that we'll never have the answers to, and we're going to be banging heads over them for years and years, points of doctrine that nobody can prove one way or the other. To me, much of religion, especially when it comes down to bitter, acrimonious debates, makes about as much sense as a kamikaze pilot wearing a helmet. It's just frankly not that worth that much worth worrying about. It really isn't. And it's not. This is the best tool I've come for interacting with other humans, and having a shared experience about something that should be kind and loving and gentle and too often is bitter and mean-spirited. Thanks.